Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
What would it be like to grow up in a society based on Darwinian evolution? In today's episode of ID the Future, we're going to find out. This is John West, Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. Recently, I was in Hollywood, California for a post-play discussion after the final performance of the play, Disinherit the Wind. The play tells the story of a renowned neurobiologist who sues his university for the right to challenge neo-Darwinian evolution. After the play's performance, the audience got to discuss the play with its playwright and star, Matt Chait, biologist Jonathan Wells, and myself. One of the people who attended the play was a biology professor who grew up under communism, and he made some very intriguing comments about both the social impact of Darwin's theory and the science of Darwinian evolution.
I was born in what used to be a communist country, and you may not be aware, but communism was literally welded to Darwinism. You cannot be a communist and actually believe in God or anything like that. That was an impossibility. So, for me personally, the question of random chance was never that much of an issue, mostly because it was not that much of a starter to begin with. But for me, the biggest issue was the natural selection problem, because that essentially sets up in social circles a whole mechanism where there is nothing but continuous contention and struggle. It essentially legitimizes conflict instead of participation and cooperation. Anybody who's so naive as to wish to cooperate or engender in some sense a participatory atmosphere, that's naive. You have to fight your way to get to the top of whatever it is. And then when you're at the top, you have to keep fighting in order to stay there, because everybody else wants to fight you for it. You know, so this kind of thing essentially creates a philosophical justification for all the conflicts that we have. Now, as far as the wonder of biochemistry, I wonder if I may be just briefly permitted to add to your wonderful description at the beginning, and that is that every cell in our body, every single day of our life, sustains more than 20,000 lesions to the DNA. So the question is not just how did life originate, but how is life even possible? And these 20,000 lesions, by the way, are merely from endogenous causes. It's like working in the kitchen. You get a little wet, you're a little burnt, a little cut, this, that, and the other. If you work in the garage, same thing. You always have to have a box of bandages somewhere nearby handy for a very simple reason, because you expect that you're going to sustain some injury. Similarly, on a molecular level, every cell sustains 20,000 lesions every single day of our lives to its DNA. So the question is, how is it possible for life to even be maintained? And that necessitates a fully developed repair machinery that is already in place when you begin with life in order to maintain the integrity of the DNA. When that repair mechanism fails for whatever reason, and it is a very elaborate one, some records say that this most modest bacterium has more than 200 repair mechanisms in play at all times. Are we getting the sense of the complexity of this? So it's not sufficient to get just a replicator. You have to have the repair shop for it. And then you have to have all the repair tools and the repair men in order to maintain this thing from falling apart. And people who, for whatever reason, have lost some of these repair mechanisms, they display many of the disorders that result from that.
Biologist Jonathan Wells, author of Zombie Science, responded to these comments, and then I had something to say as well.
One thing I would add as a molecular biologist, embryologist, is that even if you have all this stuff you're talking about and you need it to survive, there's more on top of that. For example, when the DNA is transcribed into RNA, the RNA or the protein from it has to go to a certain place in the cell to do its job. That spatial information is not in the DNA. So there are whole other levels of codes. There's the bioelectric code. There's the membrane code, the sugar code, all in addition to the DNA. So life is really wondrous.
On your perceptive point about the struggle and the social applications of Darwinism, that's also really poignant and important point. And I think, you know, Darwin in The Origin had this passage that in retrospect is really kind of chilling, where he talks about that it's from basically disease, starvation, death, famine, that you get the production of the higher animals. So the creator becomes not some sort of cosmic mind or personal intelligence. It becomes famine, death, disease. And he was getting this from Thomas Malthus and others. And if you think about what that does to your worldview, where the best things we can conceive of, whether it be Michelangelo or Isaac Newton or Einstein, are the products of not some sort of, you know, intentionality or sort of mind, but instead famine, disease, death. That does have implications for how we treat each other, and it's not extraneous to Darwin's theory.
Although Disinherit the Wind has now concluded its run in Hollywood, you can still purchase a script of the play by Matt Chait at Amazon.com. Just search for the play, Disinherit the Wind. In future podcasts, we will share more of the fascinating discussion with the audience after the play, including a question about how we can separate faith from fact in scientific articles. For ID the Future, this is John West.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.